Hi everyone, welcome to the Divorce Girl Smiling Podcast. My name is Jackie Pilisoff and I'm your host. I'm the creator and editor-in-chief of Divorce Girl Smiling, the website, the podcast, and the mobile app. When I got divorced, my kids were 3 and 5. Back then, I wasn't thinking about anything except the present. I was thinking about how they were going to be affected at ages 3 and 5. And I never thought about college, obviously, because it was so far away. But I want to tell you that it is going to be here in a blink of an eye. And I always suggest to people getting divorced, even if your kids are young, talk to your divorce attorney, talk to your mediator about how you are planning to pay for college. I know a lot can change in several years, but if you have sort of a base, you have less of a chance of having to go back to court if you know who's paying for college or you have like a general idea. But what if you're getting divorced and your kids are nearing college age? Like let's say they're in junior high even or in high school, and you're getting divorced and you have to think about college and paying for it. So I want to talk about today specifically divorce and college, divorced parents paying for college, how does it work, and what are some tips? And to talk about this, I have a great guest. Her name is Vicki Vollweiler. Vicki is the founder of College Financial Prep, which is a company that she started that helps people with all things related to college, but mostly financial planning for college. Things like how to get scholarships, how to deal with financial aid form prep, appeals, student loan guidance, and divorce and other extenuating circumstances. So I'm so excited for this. Hi, Vicki.
Hi, Jackie.
It's so nice to have you here. I also want to add that Vicki has an MBA and she's also a certified divorce coach. So she definitely understands the divorce arena. So Vicki, thank you so much for being here. I think this is going to be wonderful. I think that getting divorced is stressful enough, and then add in that, oh my gosh, now I have to think about paying for college, right?
Oh, definitely. Oh, and trust me, I'm divorced myself. I get it, both from, you know, the personal side as well as the professional side.
Okay, so I wish that we would have met a couple years ago. So for listeners, I have 2 kids in college right now. I have a freshman and a junior. And boy, do I wish I would have known Vicki, because I had no clue what I was doing. And Vicki, you probably could have helped me with all these things like scholarships, even how to pick schools, you know, and then obviously the paying. So I want to help my listeners with this kind of information because this is really important. And It's stressful for any parents, let alone divorced parents. So Vicki wrote an article for Divorce Girl Smiling called Divorced Parents Paying for College, How Does It Work, and Other Tips. And that's what we're going to talk about. Before we get into the tips, tell me about your experience with your clients who come to you. What are their biggest concerns when it comes to financial planning with college and being divorced?
A lot of the times, you know, clients will come to me, they're either separated, they're already divorced. And because the divorce process itself is so complicated, you know, now you're throwing this whole new world of planning for college on top of it. And, you know, you take a household and, you know, oftentimes a lot of people divorce because of financial concerns, and now you're taking these households that are splitting into 2 households, so they have even more financial issues, and now they need to pay for college on top of that. And also, you know, how they're going to figure out who pays what, and people from different states, there's different guidelines. So it also depends on what state a client is from, depending on how we may move forward with either selecting colleges or, you know, figuring out the game plan and the budget. Ideally, no matter what state somebody is from, you know, I'm hopeful that both parents will be on board and be contributing to college costs for their children. But that's not always the case. And regardless, you know, what I like to do is sit down with clients and I want to hear the whole story and hear where both parents are in terms of planning for their child. Ideally, we'll get both parents and the student, you know, on a Zoom call all together. And we'll all work towards a common goal. I mean, that's ideal. Other times I'll work with just one parent and a child.
All right. Now, Vicki, I want to ask you this. In Illinois, where I live, basically, if you go to a judge and you're deciding who's paying for college and you can't come to an agreement, basically, this is what I've heard. It's 33% for one parent, 33% for the other parent, and 33% for the kid. And that's how it's divided up in Illinois. Is it like that in other states or is it different in every state?
It's different in every state. I'm from New York, and in New York, they usually use what's called a SUNY cap, meaning the in-state public university system of New York, and both parents, based on their pro rata shares, based on their income, you know, they're responsible to pay for up to that SUNY standard. Some states, college isn't required at all. You know, sometimes parents will assume, well, the kid wants to go to college, that's on them, and they can pay for it. But when it comes to taking out student loans, that's not the way it works. Really, freshman year, they're only eligible to take out $5,500 in loans freshman year through the federal government. So they're limited to that $5,500. Anything beyond that, it will need to be up to the parents to take out either a parent plus loan or a private loan. Or even if the student went to take out a private loan, they would need a cosigner. So that would still fall on the parents. So it's very hard to just say, well, it's going to be up to the kids.
So it really sounds like you know what you're talking about, Vicki. And it sounds like somebody can call you from anywhere in the U.S., and tell you their specific situation. You're going to listen to their situation and then give them different options.
Yes.
Okay. Let's get to the tips, because I think it's really important. Like, when I got divorced, as I said at the beginning of this podcast, my kids were 3 and 5. I was not thinking college, and neither was my attorney, which is really a shame. So make sure, for the listeners who are listening to this, that your attorney at least address college, no matter how old your kids are.
A lot of times they'll say, oh, college is so far away, we'll deal with it then. But really, it is so important to talk about it, even if they're 3 and 5.
100%, because if you talk about it when they're 3 and 5, you might not have to go back to court. Now, if things change, then maybe you will have to go back to court. But at least you have an option of maybe not having to go back if you discuss it and get it out of the way right away.
Definitely.
All right. Tip number one from Vicki: plan carefully with your mediator or attorney as to who has residential custody and receives child support. This can greatly impact your cost of college. What does that mean?
So, when your child is applying to colleges and filling out the financial aid forms, there are some schools that will only require the information from one parent, the custodial parent. And even if the parents both have 50-50 joint custody, I could still determine who the custodial parent is. So ideally, that custodial parent may also have less income, and that will help. I mean, really, it'll help both parents out. I mean, ideally, that one parent is going to receive some sort of financial aid, and then both parents will benefit by having a lower cost for, you know, tuition.
Correct. All right, tip number two, insist that even if a former spouse will not be contributing to the cost of college, that they will participate if the college financial aid offices request their financial information.
So there, I said that there are some schools that will request just the custodial parents' information. There are other schools that will request both parents' financial information, even if the divorce agreement says neither parent is responsible for the cost of college. Now, what can happen is, say the second parent just absolutely refuses to send their financial information. They don't want any part of it. The school can then say, well, since you didn't supply all the necessary paperwork, then I guess nobody really needs financial aid from this family. So it can certainly hurt. It, you know, ideally, it could be written into the divorce agreement that both parents will at least participate in supplying financial information in the hopes that it will help financially.
Number three, we sort of touched on this, but I want to go back to it. Every state considers college differently when it comes to divorce. If your co-parent refuses to participate in college costs, don't panic. There are many options and possibility where only your finances will be considered and merit scholarships and or need-based aid can be offered.
So this goes back to what we were just saying, there are certain schools that will look at only one parent's income. When I sit down with clients, I'll strategically, you know, point them to certain schools and not to others, based on what information is going to be required. So it's important, and we may get into this a little bit later, but it's important to be flexible with the colleges that you and, you know, your child is ultimately going to apply to, because there are some that may benefit you more financially than others.
Vicki, that is so smart. It leads right into the next point where you say apply to the right colleges and universities and learn how to be strategic. So for the listeners, Vicki has been doing this for 8 years. So you probably know about countless schools and you know what their policies are. And that has to come into play not only for divorced parents, but any parent. Like, you know, as a parent, I just picked schools for my kids that I thought they would like. Well, I had no real science behind it. We just went with our gut. We went and visited the schools. Does this feel right? We asked questions, but we didn't look at it enough from a financial perspective. And that's what Vicki can help you do, because that is a should really come into play if you're concerned about finances and college, right, Vicki?
Oh, definitely. Here, and let me just say this. The schools that you see on like everybody's sweatshirt, they're most likely the ones not to give much in aid.
Right.
You know, everybody wants to go there. They don't have to give out money to entice people to go there, so to speak. That's why I said earlier, it's important to be flexible. You know, there are lots of great opportunities out there for educations and for career paths. And so, yeah, it's just important to keep an open mind when it comes to college.
So I know a person who has a business and her entire business is just helping people pick the schools. So it sounds like, Vicki, you not only help people pick, but you also get into so many other things.
So there are traditional college advisors, and they will assist with picking the schools and the Common App and essays. And I have those sources, you know, with me at College Financial Prep. I personally don't do that. I focus on the finances. The college advisors know the schools and the programs intimately. I know the data behind the schools. So I do everything from that vantage point, looking at the data. And they can come to me with a list of schools and we can go through it based on the client's personal finances and determine what those projected costs specifically for that parent will likely be at each school. And then from there, we can say, okay, well, you know, you had been considering this school. The numbers are not going to work for you. So let's, you know, find some others that will be more financially friendly.
Oh my gosh, I love this, Vicki. You do amazing work. You're listening to the Divorce Girl Smiling podcast with Jackie Pilisoff and my guest, Vicki Vollweiler, who is the founder of College Financial Prep, and she's also a certified divorce coach, and Vicki has been doing this for 8 years. All right, we are talking about tips for divorced parents sending their kids to college. Let's talk about merit scholarships. Tell me about that.
Merit scholarships are offered by many colleges. It's not just for straight A students. It's not just for kids that, you know, have perfect scores on the SATs or ACTs. There are many colleges at different levels that will offer merit scholarships to their top applicants. It could be grades to their top applicants. It could also be for reasons such as perhaps the student is a leading French horn player and the band needs a new French horn player. It could be that they are starting a brand new, they're offering a brand new major and your child wants to enroll in that program at the school. It could be because you're from a certain geographic location within the United States and the school is in a different geographic location and they're looking to expand their national outreach and they want to entice your student to attend that school. So many different reasons out there for why merit scholarships could be offered. And really, the schools are businesses. They're looking to fill seats. And merit scholarships are a way for the schools to offer a discount on the total price. So they're giving you a discount to entice you to go to that school.
I think everyone thinks that merit scholarships are only for kids with really good grades and high SAT and ACT scores.
No. I mean, there are all different level schools mm-hmm. within the country. And let me say this. You know, typically, most people that are applying to college have heard that you should apply to reach schools, target schools, safety schools. I mean, you're not going to find the merit scholarships at your reach schools. Most likely, you're more likely to find merit scholarships being offered to you by your safety schools. Why? Because you're probably at the top of the applicant pool for your safety schools. So by adding more safety schools, you're likely also adding more financially friendly schools. I mean, you know, obviously we'd have to run the numbers to confirm that, but, you know, just... It's more likely to receive merit scholarship opportunities from those colleges and universities.
Well, and then it all comes down to like weighing what you and your child really wants. I mean, you know, you could say at the end, okay, you could go to this school and it's going to be so much cheaper, but is it really in your heart to go to your reach school? Like at the end, it comes down to just sitting and talking with your kids and really considering and weighing all the options and seeing if you're willing to pay the higher price for the school that's a better school. I mean, not better, so but just, you know, a higher reach school.
Let me give you an example about that. So let's talk about two different situations. One, maybe your child wants to be a teacher. So the options could be, you know, they either go to an in-state university or they go to a private university, they go out of state somewhere. But in those situations, whether they go in-state or to a private, they may very well end up working in the same school district. You know, say they both want to be elementary school teachers. The same public school district, they may be earning the same salary after taking the same licensing exam, but yet one could have massive amounts of student loans and the other not. You know, which was the better option for that person? Then you can have another situation where maybe the child is going for a really specialized career path. You know, maybe they want to be, I'm making this up, a medical researcher. You know, maybe choosing the private university will greatly impact them in the long run. Maybe they'll have more employment opportunities that will come with, you know, greater salary potential, as opposed to choosing to go to the in-state university that may not have offered the program or the degree that will help that student with the career path. So it's important to think about, you know, what the future career goals are and the student loans. Will the student be able to manage it? Is it worth it?
That is such, those are great examples. And I want to say I was a journalism major. This was for graduate school. And I remember at the time it was like, if you went to Syracuse for journalism, that was like a layup. You were going to get a job in a minute after college. Now, if you went to another school, it might not be the case. So different schools have different reputations, and maybe companies go for these schools. For example, Kelly School of Business at Indiana University. Every kid I know who has graduated from there has a job lined up when they're at the beginning of their senior year. So Vicki's right. You really have to look at the major when you're considering which schools your child wants to go to.
Right, right. And the future salary potential with that future career path.
And we're not saying that you have to send your child to a school he or she is going to hate. Obviously, you're going to go visit and see if you like it before dropping your kid off there in the fall.
Yes, of course.
Okay, moving on to the last part of the article, which is called When Is It Time to Apply to College? So when is it time to apply to college, Vicki?
So going into senior year, August 1st is when the Common App opens. Hopefully, junior year is when the college research is happening, putting together that list of schools, determining if those schools on that list are financially friendly. As I said, August 1st is when the Common App opens, and that's when the students can start applying to the schools and submitting their essays. It is possible to start writing the essays beforehand. Usually the essays are pretty similar year to year, so those can be found online. Then come October 1st is when the financial aid applications open. So that is a huge time of the year for me.
So really, junior year of high school is when kids need to, this is from what I remember, get involved in as many activities as possible, start thinking about colleges, figure out what they might want to do, go to college fairs. And then when you're a senior at the beginning of the year, August, it's sort of go time. It's time to really start kicking in this college, because tell me if I'm wrong, Vicki, but you're going to know, you have to decide by like May or June of your senior year, really, where you're going.
Right. So May 1st is college decision day. So hopefully, you know, certainly by the end of April, you will have decided where you're going. I mean, many students know much quicker than that. But yes, May 1st is college decision day. You know, you made a point about junior year and talking about clubs and all of that. And ideally, I mean, all of that's happening even as early as ninth grade. The colleges are really looking at the full high school transcript, you know, grades, activities. They want the kids to put together to submit resumes. And yeah, it goes back through ninth grade.
You know, now that I think about it, you're right. I remember my son would come home from high school his freshman year, and I'd be like, okay, you need to sign up for two clubs. Like, it was because I was hearing from people the importance of school student involvement in organizations.
Don't think that the kids need to join, you know, umpteen clubs. If anything, the schools are more interested in seeing a couple of clubs and then seeing their growth within those clubs, you know, eventually say junior and senior of high school taking on leadership roles within those clubs.
I would have to say that's the reason my daughter got into colleges, mainly because she had a lot of leadership roles and she didn't have the best grades. She didn't have the best ACT scores. So if you're listening to this and you feel like your kids are not brainiacs and it doesn't come easy to them, you can make up for it. And colleges really do look at sports clubs, music, arts. They look at all that stuff. And that can really, really make up for a student who doesn't have really great grades or great test scores.
Right. The colleges love diversity. They want diverse, you know, a diverse student body. Mm-hmm. So, you know, anything that will make your child, you know, different, stand out, if they have a unique interest, that's wonderful. Don't downplay it.
All right, before we sign off, I just want to quickly have you talk about the FAFSA, because I have to tell you, Vicki, this thing took me about 3 hours to fill out and figure out. It was so complicated. What can you simplify it a little for people so they're not so intimidated?
It's certainly more confusing if you're separated or divorced. If you've been divorced for many, many years, it should be simpler than for someone who's recently separated or divorced. For someone who's recently separated or divorced, you know, you could be concerned about the tax return, and, you know, you may still be showing, you know, living together with a spouse, and, you know, income could appear different. There are ways around it, so don't panic. It's something that I do every day at College Financial Prep. You know, as I mentioned myself, I'm divorced too. I've been through all the ins and outs. It can be managed. And there are ways to save lots and lots of money too. It's all important to be aware which colleges and what financial aid forms they're going to require. It's not just FAFSA. There's also the CSS profile. And that's where it can get tricky in terms of needing information from the other parent. And if there's been a remarriage, you know, with the CSS profile, it's possible for the school to be asking for financial information, you know, income and assets for up to 4 parents. Even if those 2 step parents won't be contributing a dime towards the cost of your child's college education. So just be aware. That's why I'm so focused on strategic planning ahead of time.
This has been wonderful. And I want the listeners to know that Vicki is a divorced mom. She's the founder of College Financial Prep. She has an MBA, and she's also a certified divorce coach. And here's the thing about hiring Vicki, if you're listening to this and you're thinking about it. Obviously, you have to pay her, but she has saved people thousands of dollars on the cost of college. So really, this seems amazing. Thank you so much for taking the time to talk with us.
Oh, you're very welcome. I'm so glad to be here today.
I want to leave everybody listening with one thought. So if you listen to this podcast, I feel like we talked a lot about things that can be stressful. You know, you have to do this. You have to get your kids in activities. You have to take out loans, fill out the FAFSA, and all this. But I want everybody listening to understand this. If you're going through a divorce, if you're a single parent, you're already divorced, and you're stressing about college, I want you to at least say to yourself, this is a good stress. College is a great place for an 18-year-old kid to be. And you're blessed that your child is going to college, and they're going to be in a really good place and learn so many skills to help them in life. And so I know it's stressful, the financial part mostly, about sending your kids to college, but you're doing a wonderful thing, and you're a wonderful, wonderful, wonderful parent for doing it. So with that said, I want to thank everybody for listening. And if you want to learn more about Vicki Vollweiler and her business, go to collegefinancialprep.com. And if you want to learn more about Divorce Girl Smiling, or read other articles, or read Vicki's article, or listen to more podcasts, go to divorcedgirlsmiling.com. Thanks so much for listening, everyone, and we'll talk to you real soon.